Chapter 4. Uncovering the God Complex. How and why is power abused? From Matthew 21:23. Now when he came into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people confronted him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority?" One cannot truly understand and support a civil rights movement without first having a biblical understanding of the relationship between the words power and authority. The word power can be defined as either legal authority or physical strength. In the English language, we have one word for both definitions and must use the context of the sentence to determine which definition applies. However, in the Greek language, in which the New Testament is written, there are two separate and distinct words for power. One word, exousia, is used for legal authority, while the other, dunamis, can refer to both physical and spiritual strength. The word exousia, authority, is used in the scriptures such as John 19:10-11, when Pontius Pilate incorrectly assumed that he had the political authority to release or crucify Christ. Quote, "Then Pilate said to him, 'Are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have the power to crucify you and the power to release you?' Jesus answered, 'You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above.'" All examples of power are the exousia version of the word. The word dunamis, strength, on the other hand, is used in the scriptures such as 2 Corinthians 12:9-10. Quote, "And he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength,'" dunamis strength, "'is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power, dunamis, of Christ may rest upon me." Jesus possessed both the exousia, legal authority, and the dunamis strength over unclean spirits. From Luke 4:36, "And they were all amazed and spoke among themselves, saying, 'What a word is this! For with authority, exousia, and power, dunamis, he commanded the unclean spirits, and they came out.'" History is full of examples in which unjust and wicked persons attempt to use physical power to force compliance from a weaker individual without the legal authority to do so. A 17-year-old bully may have the power, the physical strength, to extort milk money from your 6-year-old, but not have the power, the legal authority, to do so. Without the legal authority, the bully then becomes a criminal and a thief. When government officials use physical strength, i.e. the police or the army or the courts, to enforce civil penalties, fines, jail, or death, upon its citizens without the legal authority to do so, this is known as tyranny. As a former police officer, I was what was considered a civil authority. While operating under the authority of law, I had a tremendous amount of power granted to me. I was even permitted to enter a house without a search warrant if I believed a crime was being committed. However, the amount of my authority was limited by the law and the Constitution. For me to search a person's house arbitrarily just because I felt like it, would have been a violation of that authority, since citizens have rights against illegal search and seizure as protected by the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. These rights are recognized in the Constitution so as to protect the American people from the abuses of corrupt authority figures. I may have possessed the power, a gun or a battering ram, to enter your house, but I did not possess the legal or constitutional authority to do so. Throughout history, and once granted the reins of power either by force or election, those in power have come to dominate the lives of those they are entrusted to govern. Again, as British historian Lord Acton explained, quote, power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, unquote. In times past, this corruption of political power has led to many abuses by the ruling class, or those elected to government positions, over their subjects and or fellow citizens. One of our founding fathers' chief complaints against the British Crown was that the British Parliament insisted that they had the authority to pass any law they chose and would then use their army to force the colonists into compliance. This type of tyranny, government-sanctioned bullying, is the exact opposite of freedom and liberty. As a matter of fact, the colonists felt that this abuse of power created conditions akin to slavery. Thomas Paine articulated the feelings of the American colonists quite well in The Crisis, written on December 23, 1776. Quote, Britain, with an army to enforce her tyranny, has declared that she has a right not only to tax, but to bind us in all cases whatsoever. And if being bound in that manner is not slavery, then is there not such a thing as slavery upon the earth? Even the expression is impious, for so unlimited a power can belong only to God. Unquote. This impious expression of power is what I call a quote-unquote God complex. A God complex is a condition that results from an intoxication of power in which political leaders, kings, lawmakers, and judges begin to believe that their authority is unlimited. They begin to imagine that they are the highest authority on earth and have the right to issue orders, commands, or pass laws which violate the strict parameters of their legal authority. Allow me to share a couple of personal testimonies in order to show how this God complex develops and what a person should do when confronted by it. Upon entering the U.S. Air Force at age 18, I found myself at the bottom of a very large chain of command, with so many individuals above me issuing lawful orders. I oftentimes find myself in what is known as a no-win or catch-22 situation. A catch-22 occurs when a subordinate finds himself faced with a set of contradictory orders issued by superiors. When, for example, two sergeants of equal rank gave me a series of contradictory orders, I would call the two sergeants together and explain my dilemma. I would explain, I have no problem respecting and honoring those in authority above me. However, unknown to the other, you have placed me in a catch-22 situation. If I obey the orders of one, I am disobeying the orders of the other. Therefore, you must get together and reach a conclusion on which order I should follow. When two sergeants of different ranks issued me a set of contradictory orders, the situation was much easier to navigate. Even though I was faced with another catch-22 situation. I would simply obey the higher authority and disobey the lower authority. There was, in fact, no other option. This was not always received well by the sergeant of lower rank, however. When confronted by the lower-ranking sergeant as to why I disobeyed a lawful order, I would inform him that he was outranked by a lawful orders of his superior. It surprised me how often this answer did not satisfy. When the lower-ranking sergeant continued to harass me about my disobedience to his orders, I would appeal to the higher authority. I would call in the higher-ranking sergeant to act as arbitrator between myself and my other superior. When it became clear that the lower-ranking sergeant disregarded a higher order, it often did not bode well for him because now he was the one who had forgotten or ignored his place in the chain of command. This is the only appropriate way in which to handle these types of situations and individuals. Here is another similar situation. Several years ago, I was working for a very large electric utility company in Columbus, Ohio. My job was to install and maintain the electric grid under the city, which ran through a series of vaults and manholes. Being the senior union lineman at the time, I was given the task to oversee contractors hired to install electrical cables in the newly constructed Nationwide Arena complex. My job was to give them a briefing and to ensure that all government regulations mandated by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, otherwise known as OSHA, and company safety policies were being complied with. I was also tasked with authorizing entry into manholes, which are considered, quote-unquote, confined spaces by OSHA. I was the company instructor for all first aid CPR training, as well as the instructor for all company personnel needing OSHA certification to enter a confined space. OSHA law and our company safety manual requires certain conditions be met before any individual is permitted to enter a confined space. They are as follows. 1. All personnel tasked with performing duties within a confined space must have attended confined entry training. 2. All individuals must be certified in first aid and CPR. 3. Before opening or entering a confined space, the space must first be tested to ensure the atmosphere is breathable and that no dangerous or explosive gases are present. 4. Once the manhole cover has been removed, provisions must be made to prevent personnel or bystanders from falling into the hole. A rescue device must also be present for emergency situations if carrying a full-grown man up a ladder is not feasible. 5. A government document had to be signed by a qualified entry supervisor verifying that all of the above provisions were met before allowing entry into the confined space. Upon arriving at the job site, I made contact with the contract personnel. I immediately noticed that they had the manhole cover off, but the hole was not barricaded in order to prevent people from falling in, risking injury. I asked the contractors if they had a manhole rescue rack. They told me they did not. I then asked if they had taken an air sample before removing the manhole cover so no dangerous or explosive gases were present. Again, they had not. I then explained that according to OSHA law, I could not permit them entry until the above requirements had been met. Not wanting to shut down the job completely, I told them that I would go back into our shop and bring out all the required equipment, i.e. a manhole, barricade, air monitor, etc. On the way back to our shop, I called my department head and advised him of the situation. He agreed I took the right course of action. Then I began to think about the provisions I had taught for so many years. I soon realized that if these individuals received the required OSHA-confined entry training, they would have known all of these requirements. Therefore, they had either not had the training or were willfully defying the requirements. Returning to the job site, I asked if they had received the required training. They responded that they had not. I advised that according to federal law, I would not be able to sign the government document allowing entry into the confined space, which prompted them to call their supervisor. Several minutes later, their boss showed up and was irate. I advised him of the law and that if he had any further problems with my decision, he could take it up with my department head. I even offered him my cell phone to call my supervisor. After a few minutes of conferring with my boss, he handed the phone back with a smile and said, he said to let us in the manhole. Convinced there was a miscommunication about the situation, I got on the phone with my boss and was ordered to allow them entry into the hole. Realizing that this was not a lawful order, I advised him to contact his boss for further clarification. He called me back several minutes later with the same response. His boss also said to let them in the hole. This placed me in a no-win situation. If I were to obey the federal law, then I would be disobeying the orders of my boss. If I obeyed the order of my boss, on the other hand, I would be in defiance of federal law. Clear in my understanding of the doctrine of higher authority, I knew exactly what to do. I responded to my boss in the following manner. Quote, "Let me make this very clear to you. Neither you nor your boss has the authority to command me to violate a federal law. You are overstepping your authority by so ordering. If I sign this legal document and allow these unqualified workers entry into this confined space, I could find myself both criminally and civilly liable. Therefore, I am not allowing them entry into this confined space. You essentially have three choices before you now. One, you can come out yourself and sign the document allowing entry into the space, thus making yourself criminally and civilly liable in the event of an accident. Two, you can send some other person out to relieve me of my duties, at which time I will advise them of their responsibility under the law. Three, you can replace the contractors with our personnel who have been properly trained and equipped." I went on to advise him that the ball is now in your court. You do whatever you need to do from this point on, but I will not comply with your orders because they are not lawful. He opted for option number three. Historically, refusing to comply with unlawful edicts of a higher authority is known as manly firmness, for it requires courage to tell those in authority that you will not comply with their unjust orders. This will be explored further in the following chapter. As you can imagine, people in authority do not like being disobeyed by their subordinates, even when the subordinate has taken a proper legal position. It should come as no surprise, then, that when those in power feel threatened, they push back. Those who have forgotten or do not wish to comply with the doctrine of higher authority because they have developed a God complex will often retaliate in either an aggressive or passive-aggressive way. Both biblical and American history bears this out. King Nebuchadnezzar and King George of England are two historical examples that we will consider in the next chapter. The central question then becomes this: when are government officials operating under a legal authority, and when have they overstepped their authority and become tyrants? Before we get ahead of ourselves trying to answer this question, let us first recognize and understand that there is a, quote, universal chain of command, unquote, often ignored. The root cause of these abuses of power, in fact, is either a lack of understanding or a complete rejection of what can be termed, quote, the doctrine of higher authority, unquote, and the, quote, universal chain of command, unquote. End of chapter 4.